source of Alpeh, we need to actually have a statute reading. If that's correct, what is the value of a Medus Patera? Because if you're going to kill yourself trying to understand something, maybe for even several years, you've really done nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, first of all, the distinction you made is actually a correct distinction. It's Tarshim Hesav, the actual words themselves have a certain Kedushin, although there is certainly much more Schar if you understand even that, but there is at least some Kiyam HaMitzvah in the words themselves, as opposed to Tarshim Alpeh, the Kiyam HaMitzvah is only in the understanding. Now, so that is. But then you ask the question, so what is a Melus Patera? So here, let me explain. When I say understanding, I don't necessarily mean that you have to know what the final pshat is. First of all, even if a person understands, there's always infinite levels of understanding. But it means that you have to be involved in the attempt to understand. So we just have to qualify it a little bit. It is not the lamaisa tika havana, but it is the attempt. So if you're learning a Gemara, even if you don't know what the words are, but you're taking your jasper, you're looking it up, or you're trying to figure out what is the connection that Rashi's making over here, what is the svara of Taisus. So even if you have a tzarechiyin, even if you have all sorts of kashas, even if you're confused, you're certainly makayim Talmud Torah, because your goal is to try to understand. So I would just qualify it in that way. In fact, they have a famous story they say about Rav Chaim, and according to what I just said, there's a tzarechiyin on the story. Actually, wouldn't be true. You know, there is a das yachid in the Shulchan Aruch brings that one fulfills the mitzvah of Suda Shlishis by learning. The chatchila should be bread, if not bread, mazonos, if not mazonos, peiros. And some say learning. So they say, a Meister Rav Chaim was once learning, and it was time for Shalosh Shivis, and Rav Chaim said, we have to stop, we have to watch, we have to have Shalosh Shivis. So one of the Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, we're in the middle of learning, so why can't we be Yotzei with Divrei Torah? So Rav Chaim's answer is, well, we certainly could be Yotzei with Divrei Torah, but what if I say a Chiddush on Shabbos, and on Monday or Sunday it gets schlubbed up, so it's no longer true. So Lamafreya, we didn't have Torah, we didn't have Shalosh Shabbos. But he says, my Rebbetzin's gefilte fish is irrefutable. You cannot schlug it up. So the story seems to go with the premise that if I come up with an observation in Torah and it turns out not to be MS, Lamafreya, I wasn't Yotzei Torah. But that's not true. That really is not true. When you learn a Gemara, the Gemara has a Havamina. And the Gemara itself says, you know, the Havamina is wrong. So does that mean you wasted your time in going over what the Havamina is? Certainly not. Because a Limud HaTorah is not only knowing the maskana, but it's going through the process of trying to figure it out. And therefore, even Divrei Torah that are not finally in a matzav of emes, if one is looking for the emes, even if you're not there, Hashem rewards you for the process of looking. And that would be the difference between Torah Shabbat Zav and Torah Shabbat Zav.
If someone does a mitzvah purely because they think it's the right thing to do, but they aren't aware it's written in the Torah and they aren't aware that they're fulfilling a positive commandment. Do we say that they've performed the mitzvah, A, and B, do they get schar even if they haven't performed the mitzvah?
Yeah, so some want to be mechalek between a mitzvah ben adam l'makom and a mitzvah ben l'chaveira. And let's say for example, ben adam l'makom, the person simply didn't do malacha that Shabbos, but he didn't know Hashem commanded. So at that point, there's no mila. There's nothing you accomplished if you just happen to sleep that day in, not knowing you're serving Hashem. By a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, such as giving tzedakah, okay, and the like, so some say that since the purpose of the mitzvah is the hatava, is the good that you do for another person, so even if a person doesn't have a knowledge that it's a mitzvah, one still has done the ratzon Hashem in that mitzvah, and therefore he would get reward. That's one opinion. There is another opinion, however, that there is no reward for a mitzvah, or at least you haven't done the mitzvah, unless you know that it is the commandment of God. So even if you don't have a conscious kavana, you have to know it's the commandment of God. And so an example would be an atheist could not get reward for doing any mitzvah because he does not believe there's a God that gave the mitzvah. I can't say we have a definite psak halacha on this, but undoubtedly, I would say that even if we say that it is not a fulfillment of a mitzvah, Hashem will certainly give a person some reward for the good that they've done in the world. Now, I will tell you, there's a famous din of the Rambam. The Rambam talks about non-Jews who keep the seven mitzvahs of Noach. And the Gemara says they get Olam Haba. A non-Jew who keeps the seven mitzvahs of Noach gets Olam Haba. But the Rambam says only if they keep them because Hashem commanded them. So, for example, if a non-Jew doesn't kill, doesn't steal, only because they think it's logical, they don't think it's Hashem's commandment, the Rambam says they don't get Olam Haba. But again, that doesn't mean they don't get any support. So there is a big machlokas. So essentially there is a machlokas whether mitzvos that are interpersonal have an independent validity apart from the fact that it's the commandments of Hashem. So both views do find their expression in different sheets.
Yeah. In terms of nowadays women in Judaism, throughout the years, it obviously changed. The role of women never changes according to the way the Torah views it. But Lamaisa, you know, they definitely changed their role in the world.
Yeah.
But what's the relation now of women in Judaism? Because it used to be that they wouldn't do anything. Now they're teachers and they're principals and they're out of the workforce. And even now with the election, in terms of women being Knesset.
Yeah.
What's the
even in the Haredi world?
Yeah.
There are two ways of looking at this. Again, some people might say this is just another bad example of how the Doros get worse and worse and worse, and we're not going to call it a good thing. We will just call it a pirza, a break of the fence of Kedusha, and the same way that society as a whole, you know, has gotten very corrupt. So at the same time, the Jewish world, even the religious world, gets corrupt as well. That's one way of looking at it. But there's a striking, amazing comment of the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon was not a feminist by any means, and the Vilna Gaon wrote this 250 years ago, before all of these things. And the Vilna Gaon says the following. He says, the idea that generally women were in the background, always important, but in the background, less of a public role, comes because the women are compared to the moon, and the men are compared to the sun. And the moon was punished, as it were. Remember, the moon wanted to be equal to the sun, or so Kadosh Baruch Hu made the moon smaller. Therefore, women have less of a public role. But the Pasuk says, when Mashiach comes, or when the Geula comes, the light of the moon shall be as great as the light of the sun. And the Vilna Gaon says, it's a Vilna Gaon. As we approach Yemos HaMashiach, there is going to be more and more chashivas to women, even in the public arena, and this will be an expression of the equality of gender. That even now they're equal in God's eyes, but in terms of roles, within halacha there will be a notion of an equality of roles. And he quotes the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that says, "Nekeva tesevev gever," which means a woman shall envelop surround the man. Now, at the time that Vilna Gaon wrote what he wrote, there was nothing particularly happening in the world of men and women. But he just wrote this. But you see very much that this is what's happening, and indeed as we get to Ikvas de Mashiach, the heels of Mashiach, the Chavle Mashiach, there is going to be a move for women to assume more and more role. Now, let me be meisif onto the Vilna Gaon with the thought of Rav Kook. And again, Rav Kook is really connected to the Vilna Gaon in a sense, because the Vilna Gaon's Talmud was Rav Chaim Volozhin, who started the Volozhin Yeshiva. Rav Kook was one of the great Talmidim of the Volozhin Yeshiva. His Rebbe was the Nitziv. So this is kind of the Litvisha Mahalach. Rav Kook, one of Rav Kook's most interesting and controversial ideas, it is a very controversial idea, is that sometimes very powerful and valid and true spiritual ideas come into the world in the guise of something that looks very bad. And that's because the Yetzer Hara takes there's a certain emes that wants to break through. And the kochos hatumah do not let that goodness break through. So it has to fool the kochos hatumah by looking like something bad. That's how it comes in, And then when it comes in, it could potentially be good, or sometimes it's trapped in the bad, not to be liberated. Did you understand this concept here? So the example he gave, Rav Kook gave a few examples. He said Zionism was such an example. Zionism, in its spiritual essence, was the desire of the Jewish soul to come back to Eretz Yisrael and ultimately be connected to Hashem. But the Kochos HaTumah didn't let that pure desire come out. So how did it come out? It came out through political Zionism, it came out through secular Zionism, because that the Yetzer Hara would let in. The Yetzer Hara would say, you want to do that, that's fine. I'm happy to let you have a movement that's based on Kefirah and based on that before. But really, Rav Kook said, in its Shoresh, it was a holy movement. And the second example Rav Kook gave was feminism. Already in his time, this was the beginning of the 1900s, already in his time, women were agitating for this and that. And much of their agitation, as it is today, is totally against halacha. But at its shorish, the notion that men and women are of equal dignity, equal chashivas, they're in the image of God, they're both entitled to respect, that is a holy movement. That is something that is good, but in order to be released into the world, it comes into the world through negative channels, and sometimes, unfortunately, it does remain distorted like a pretzel. This is Rav Kook's very, very controversial idea, in which he basically said that within all sorts of bad ideas, there are sparks of goodness that are waiting to be liberated, as opposed to simply saying, it's strafe, I want nothing to do with it. It's a very, very deep idea when you think about it. So when you combine those two ideas, so on one hand we could say there is so much about feminism. In fact, the word feminism is kind of an old-fashioned word now, but that is against Torah, that is anti-Torah, that is anti-marriage, that is anti-understanding the role of human beings. So much of it is not kosher. But at its roots, the notion of the dignity of men and women in the eyes of Hashem is a valid and good and holy idea. And the Vilna Gaon says, it is even part of Hashem's plan that as we approach Mashiach, which will be the redemption of the Jewish people and the world, women will assume much more of a role. The challenge is how to do it and still remain within the Gedarim of Halacha. And that's going to be a very, very major challenge. And many people fail that challenge. They violate the Halacha that way. But that's just something to think about. So even if, for example, let's take even something like, and I don't want to get into too many controversies, although, you're free to talk about it, the issue about women and Gemara. So we said, women can't learn Gemara. Right? Gemara and Saita, and the Rambam codifies it, that women should not learn the oral law. They should not learn Torah Shebal Peh. He who teaches his daughter the oral law is as if he is teaching her either immorality, the word is tiflis. Tiflis can either mean immorality, or something that is bland and insignificant and meaningless. There are different interpretations of what the word is. And yet, although I would say that within the traditional yeshiva world, we don't necessarily teach girls Gemara, but there are orthodox seminaries that teach women Gemara and the like, and even Chabad seminaries, without getting into Chabad generally, they teach Gemara. And the emphasis is, there is a shita in one of the great commentaries of the Torah, the Prisha, it's one of the authoritative commentaries, that says that the only isser in Chazal for women and Torah Shebal Peh is for a parent to teach it. In other words, a parent does not force it on a child, on a girl. A parent forces it on a boy, right? You got to learn Gemara whether you like it or not. But the girl, we don't force it, because that's the lashon. Usser Adam Lilamed. It doesn't say she's not allowed to learn. It says, I'm not allowed to teach. But the Prisha says, if an adult woman wants to learn Torah Shebal Peh, not only is she allowed to learn it, but I'm allowed to teach it to her. Again, with the laws of Tznius and everything else, because it's something she wants to do, and this is a way that she can also serve Hashem. And given the fact that in this day and age, we have women that are lawyers and doctors and scientists and everything else, to simply say, you know, this Gemara is too hard for you. I mean, you know, that doesn't really work. And if the spiritual nature of our world is that a woman needs this knowledge to have a respect for Judaism, then we are allowed to give it to her. So that's an example of how, although the Torah doesn't change, but how you apply the Torah may depend on the environment that you're in. When you are in an environment where women did not pursue intellectual pursuits, so we said that, we don't have to give them this. When they pursue intellectual pursuits, we have to find ways to make so. It's a complicated question. Part of the idea here is another idea of Rav Kook and Rav Tzadok that's very controversial. Again, these are very controversial ideas. Is that there are different ways Hashem reveals Emes into the world. The ultimate revelation of Emes is, of course, Matan Torah. Hashem revealed the Emes of Torah. But Hashem supplements the revelation of Matan Torah with the revelation of history. That as history unfolds, we begin to see what the world needs in different ways. And without contradicting at all the Messiah of Torah, that's not Shaykh, because that's the ultimate truth. But Hashem is also telling us what the world needs in various ways. And therefore, the unfolding of cultures is also something that we have to pay attention to. Okay, but then, complicated idea, again, I do want to point out, these are dangerous ideas in many ways, because Chas v'Shalom, you know, this could be what the reform movement said. You look at the world, times change, right? So certainly, the Torah is eternal. The Torah does not change. But in areas that are less clear-cut, where the halacha is not clear, there are different views at different times. The historical circumstances of humanity and of Klal Yisrael will require that certain ideas come to the forefront. I mean, let me give you a more benign example, an example that's not controversial at all, but it really makes the same point. Let's say when Hasidus, it used to be controversial, Hasidus started, right? Hasidus started 250 years ago. And in the initial areas, Hasidus was treated by the Vilna Gaon, and by very great Gedolim, Misnagdim. It was treated as a treif, unholy movement. What do you mean? You're going to do your own type of davening? You know, I mean, you're Ashkenazim, and you're going to do combined Nusach Sfarik, whatever it is. But yet, what did Hasidus emphasize? It emphasized joy. It emphasized Achdus. What's new about Hasidus? What? The Torah says you have to serve Hashem with Simcha, Avas Yisrael. But the answer is, all of these ideas, any movement in Judaism that's authentic is never going to have something new. If the movement says, I have a new thing I'm bringing in, then it's treif. But what happens is, in the course of the generations, certain ideas come to the forefront, and others' ideas go to the background. And then, as history progresses, certain ideas need to be re-emphasized. So Hasidus brought back certain ideas that people were not paying attention to. But we saw Salander did the same thing with Musar. He didn't create anything new. Binadam L'chaveru are the mitzvahs of the Torah. I mean, what new thing did he create? Nothing at all. But you emphasize certain things. Every door needs different things to be emphasized. Right? So there is, as it were, again, it's a very complicated question. There is, as it were, a minuet. There is a dance between Torah and society that is going on all the time. The Torah is infinite in its wisdom and infinite in what it says. But as it turns and as history turns, at certain points we emphasize these ideas, and at certain points we emphasize these ideas, and at certain points we emphasize these ideas. But sometimes the ideas come into the world through the guise of treif. You could call it a sheep in wolf's clothing. Instead of a wolf in sheep's clothing, many good ideas, many holy ideas, come into as a sheep wearing the clothing of a wolf. And you have to be able to go beneath the surface to extract. Okay, so I hope I didn't confuse you too much, but that's kind of the basic idea. Yeah?
Today in Halacha Shiur, we were told that Chilul Hashem amongst non-Jews is worse than Chilul Hashem amongst Jews, and it struck me as strange because surely we'd expect an act of chol amongst kodesh would be worse than an act of chol amongst chol. So how does one reconcile that?
Yeah, I would say this. I would say, again, I'm not sure what the mucker is. I would say that I think it's fairly clear Chilul Hashem among Jews is worse. But I think what the person may have meant is the following. What the person may have meant is that when you do a Chilul Hashem, when I do something that's a Chilul Hashem among Jews who are, let's say, religious and observant, so it's less of a Chilul Hashem because they know the Torah. In other words, like this. If I'm in yeshiva, okay, and I see a guy do something really, really bad that brings disgrace on the Torah, but I know that's not really a disgrace on the Torah because I know the Torah is emes, I know the Torah is good, so Hashem's name has not been desecrated so much simply because, you know, you do something bad here, but most people know that that's not a reflection on the Torah. Masha ain't came among the non-Jews who don't know what the Torah says, then they're going to say, oh, Judaism is a dirty religion, it's a bad religion, etc. So I think what it means is, and therefore I would say that non-religious Jews or Jews who don't know the Torah, that would be the worst Chilul Hashem, because they will take whatever a religious Jew does and they will look at it as a reflection on the whole Jewish religion. So maybe that's what he meant, that a Chilul Hashem in front of knowledgeable religious Jews is not such a bad Chilul Hashem because they know to take it with a grain of salt, and they know that it's not reflective of Yiddishkeit, as opposed to a guy who doesn't know that. But I would say that a non-religious Jew may not know that either. The Iker Chilul Hashem and Kiddush Hashem is what we do in the eyes of our fellow Jews. The guy is also important; it's very, very important. By the way, I'll tell you an interesting horror from the Meshech, not from the Yerushalmech, but and this is very Nogel Lamaisa. You know, sometimes you're in an airport or a train station or a bus station or on a plane, and you have to daven mincha. You have to daven. And if you're not going to daven, you're going to miss the time. So, let's say if you daven in an airport, I'll talk about the plane in a moment. People are going to think, in Israel it's not a big deal because a lot of people do it. But let's say you're in a place where it's very uncommon. So people sometimes say, well, maybe I shouldn't daven in a public place because that is a Chilul Hashem. So the Or Sameach is reputed to have said that if the only thing you're doing is a mitzvah and you're not doing it in a way that's hurting other people, the fact that people will interpret it to laugh at your Judaism, that's not a Chilul Hashem. That's their problem. That's not your problem. All you did was the Ratzon Hashem. If all you did was a mitzvah, the fact that somebody is going to laugh at you and think that's stupid, that can never be a Chilul Hashem. That's their Chilul Hashem. That's not your Chilul Hashem. Now, be sure you understand the difference. If, however, I daven in a way that I'm blocking an aisle, like on an airplane, sometimes people daven and people can't go to the bathroom, right, or whatever it is, or you're noisy or you're pushing, that's very different. That is a Chilul Hashem. Ad kidei kach, that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach actually said that it is better to daven in your seat and not get up, even if you miss a minyan, than to go to the minyanim if they'll block people and cause a chilul Hashem. So, do you see the chiluk? If the only thing I'm doing is the mitzvah, but people are going to laugh at me, that's not chilul Hashem. Pumperker. You're supposed to do mitzvahs with courage, that even if people mock you, you still do them. But if you're doing the mitzvah in a way that is hurting people, that would be called the Chilul Hashem, because people are going to say, oh, religious Jews don't have any consideration for other people. So be very, very cognizant of Chilul Hashem. Now, the Rambam does write, the greater the Talmid Chacham, the more Chilul Hashem in his action. Because if people look to you as a representative of Torah and you're not behaving properly, then God's name is desecrated much more than if a Pashut person violates the Torah. So somebody once told the Chofetz Chaim once gave somebody Musar, a Talmud Musar, and he said, you know, you're not behaving properly, it's a Chilul Hashem. So the Talmud says, Rebbe, I'm an Am Haaretz, nobody looks at me for anything. So the Chofetz Chaim said, for Chilul Hashem, you have to be a Baal Gaiva. What does that mean? It's good to be a modest person, it's good to say, oh, I'm a nobody. For Chilul Hashem, you got to consider yourself the Gadol Hador. You have to say, I am a Chashuva Talmud Chacham, and therefore my behavior has to be proper. So if we talk about the Yetzer Hara of being modest, one of the Yetzer Haras of being too modest is when it comes to Chilul Hashem. Chilul Hashem, you got to be a Bal Gaiva, you got to say, I'm a chosh of a person, and therefore. And the Emma says, it's 100% true. Because, as I say, when you're in a kailo, when you're in a yeshiva, all right, so even if you don't behave properly, although that's not good, no one's going to say, oh, that's the definition of a Torah Jew. You know, people look, because people have so many other Torah Jews to look at. But when you're in a small town in Pennsylvania or Montana or Wisconsin or whatever it is, and you're like the only religious Jew around, or there are very few religious Jews, then rest assured that people are watching you like a hawk. The Jews watch you, the non-Jews watch you. Who is that kid with that yarmulke? You know, how does he talk, you know, to the checkout people in the grocery store or whatever it is? And you have to be very, very careful. People are watching you all the time. And the good news is that if you behave positively, you mamish create a kiddush Hashem. It's very, very true. People will admire you, which is a nice ego thing, of course, but more importantly, they will admire the Torah, they will admire the Yiddishkeit, they will say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's religion is so good, it produces such a nice person, a kind person, and that's the goal of life, right? The Ahavta Es Hashem Elokecha, you shall love Hashem, but the Gemara in Yuma Darshan's, make the name of Hashem beloved. In the eyes of other people. That other people should say, being a religious Jew is such a good thing, a nice thing. And how do people understand that? They're not going to understand it so much by Bein Adam L'chat L'makam. The fact that you keep Shabbos and the fact that, you know, you sat in the Beis Medrash 8 hours Bein Osmanim is a tremendous thing, but that's not going to get you the admiration of people who are very far from that. Like, no unlearned or non-religious or goy is going to say, wow, what a great guy, he sat in the Beis Medrash for 8 hours. You won't even know. But in your Bein Adam L'chaveru, the way you talk to people, that they'll notice, that they will notice. So be very, very aware that when you're out there, you're acting for yourself. You are a representative of Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's nation. And you're an ambassador, and therefore you have to behave accordingly. I taught at a secular law school for many, many years. I was also a Rebbe Mishul, but my other parnasa, what was that? And I tell you, I worked at Rebbe Hashem, I wore a kippah anyway, I think the beard would give me away. There were times that not that I thought of not wearing my yarmulke, but there were times that I just thought, you know, it's so scary, you know, you're in a secular environment, like everything you do that might be not so great could be a chilul Hashem. Wouldn't it be better just to blend in so nobody knows, right? But that's it. Part of why you wear a yarmulke, part of why you wear tzitzis is that bedafka, you know that you have to try to live by a high standard. So that's why it's so much easier. I can't throw some answer. I don't have to worry about chilul Hashem because Hashem, we have so many tzaddikim here that, you know, even if I do something wrong, it's not going to... It's not going to be taken as a negative reflection, right? So it's much easier, actually. There's less Chilul Hashem in a Makom Torah than there is on the outside of the outside. Yep.
Is it prohibited to watch a play with women in it if it doesn't involve singing?
So prohibited, the word prohibited, usher, has a wide, wide range of application. Now, if we talk about, is it usher al bidin? It's difficult to say it's usher al bidin. There is an isser of kol isha, a tefillah into a woman's voice. There is an isser of his topless, not allowed to look at a woman that's not dressed in the halachas of tznius, which would probably be almost an automatic problem, unless it's a 19th century play, you know, or Puritans or whatever. So that is an isser. And there's a general isser, which is a hard halacha, that even if a woman is properly dressed, right, you're not supposed to look at her with the intention of enjoying her beauty. Okay, there's a halacha, but again, it's hard to always enforce it. But having said all that, if there's no problem of kol isha, if there's no problem of tznius, and if you're just involved in the play and you're not focusing on female beauty, I cannot say that it's austere. I mean, the same way. I mean, what would the issue be generally? I mean, the same way I go into a store and, you know, I interact with a checkout woman, etc. Or I go to a doctor's office. There's a receptionist or a secretary. This is just a woman doing a thing. So one could not say it's definitively austere. Now, there's a general issue of hashgafa about going to plays generally, which is not necessarily a man-woman thing. You know, the Gemara in Megillah talks about the late sonnes, the late sonnes of the Roman theaters and circuses, etc. But that's more in the realm of a hashgafa issue. But I don't think there's a discrete issue because a woman is in a play.
How far does the prohibition go in terms of not being modestly dressed, but being fine? Let's say it's a female leader giving a speech at the UN. So she isn't dressed in a provocative way, but she also isn't dressed in a way that Judaism is considered sneers. How does that work? Can you not watch the speech then if it's being televised?
Well, first of all, if it's televised...
let's say in person, to make it more in person.
Yeah. Well...
You're hearing your mayor speak, who happens to be a woman.
It's an interesting question, and of course we have this question in microcosm when you go into the street, go on the bus, right? In other words, we constantly see people in different ways. Meikar hadin, you can focus on a speech without hear work, without improper thoughts, there is no direct issue. In fact, it's interesting. One could even raise the question. It's not such. Now, on one hand, it's so simple. On the other hand, it's not so simple. The question is, why does a woman have to be tsanua at all? In other words, what issue? If a woman walks out in the street, right, let's say a religious woman decides she wants to dress, in a way that's not halakhically proper. What avera is a woman committing? What avera is she committing? So the truth of the matter is, the only avera she's actually committing is lifnei iver lo sitei michshol, because she might be goreim the men to have improper thoughts. So it's an amazing thing. All of the halachas of tzniyos are that it's forbidden to cause a man to have improper thoughts. There's no be'etzem, there's no intrinsic issue, except for covering hair. It's interesting, it's a very mudmazah. A married woman must cover hair, that's a direct issue. But covering the rest of her body is not a direct issue, it's only because of lifnei iver. Now that would mean, therefore, that your prohibition of gazing at a woman without levush sanua is primarily because of the sexual thoughts it would give you. If the context is you don't have those sexual thoughts, then technically there is no issue. But the only question is, realistically, a person needs to not trust himself, because we never know. But that's what I would say. So in these situations, it's not directly prohibited, but one should not gaze. I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, what happens to the Knesset? I mean, a simple example. In the Knesset, we have religious people. We have Talmidei Chachamim in the Knesset. They're members of Degel HaTorah. They're members of religious parties. And there are women in the Knesset, and some of the women are not dressed tzanua, and some of the women give speeches. And you see, if you look, you see, the men are looking, they're looking. They're not staring, but, they look up because they're listening to a speech or whatever it is. So you see that there is such a concept for them. Okay. Yeah.
Why do we have a mitzvah to show kavod to other people when, for them, it can be damaging to indulge in kavod?
Mm. Yeah, that's a very, very good, that's a very good question. Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he grew up in Russia, so his father was the Rav of the town, small town. The Russian for the Russian said later, a very cute thing, when people would call him the Gadol Hador. So he would say, in Europe, to be a Rav of the smallest village, the basic thing was you had to know Shas and Shulchan Aruch. So if you were greater, you had Chidushim, but Shas and Shulchan Aruch, that was the requirement to be the Rav, of a 20-family village. He says, here in America, Shas and Shulchan Aruch, you become Gadol the Gadol Hador. He says, this was not a big deal. But anyway, when he was 9 years old, Rav Moshe knew, if I recall the story correctly, the three Babas, Baba Kama, Baba Matthew, Baba Basra, were in Tysus, right? Rashi Echos, Rashbam and Tysus. Nine years old. It's a pretty good accomplishment. So when he would walk in the city, the old men would stand up for him. The old men would stand up. They would honor this brilliant potential Talmud Chacham, already a Talmud Chacham, at 9 years old. The father was very angry. The father said, you're going to ruin my son. You're going to make him a Baal Gaiva that the 9-year-old walks by and 70-year-old people stand up. You don't stand up for him because the Kavayit is going to be Mazakim. The Gaiva is going to be Mazakim. And all that he accomplished can be destroyed because of Gaiva. So the point that you're making is a very good point. And the only answer I can give you is that there is an issue of balance. I think the emphasis is you don't show excessive kavod, but you show kavod. But when you show a certain measure of kavod to all human beings, that doesn't create gaiva, because you know I show you kavod, I show him kavod. But in a chidami, you try not to show exceptional favoritism to somebody, even if they're very worthy, because that could be mazik them. So that is an important cheshman. On the other hand, if that's not a danger, then it's proper to honor people. That's why Chazal say that you only say miktsa shvachay lefanav, right? When I praise somebody, if I praise you and right in front of you, I should only say part of your praises. I shouldn't say everything, because what's going to happen? If I try to say everything, gives a person a swelled head. Gaiva is a bad thing. Gaiva is a very, very bad thing. But at the same time, let me just say, people do need positive affirmation, meaning to say, to simply, anava does not mean a person thinks, I'm a nothing, I'm a failure, because that gives a person depression. So a person needs to be built up, but in a way that doesn't make him feel he's better than everybody else.
Why can we not charge with this? And two is, why is it such a severe thing?
I'll tell you, let me begin with a little story. As you know, it is forbidden to lend money with interest, and it's even forbidden to give interest on your Jew to Jew loan. The issur is not only on the Malva, the issur is on the Leiva to pay Ribbis. So the story goes that in Europe there was a Jewish money lender who used to lend money to Jews and charge interest. He was a big Russian. So when he died, the Chevra Kadisha wanted to punish him because he had collected all this interest. So they said that the family has to pay 5 times the price for the grave. A grave costs money. So if a Stam grave costs $100, let's say, this family has to pay $500. So the family was outraged at what they were being asked to pay $500. They went to Rabbi Akiva Eiger and they said, why do we have to pay $500 for a grave? The grave is only, I'm making up the numbers, it's only $100. Rabbi Akiva Eiger said, oh, it's perfect sense. It's not a kenas. Because the reason graves are so cheap is because they're temporary. There's Techias HaMeisen. Then he's going to leave the grave. Says, but Malve Beribis, there's no Techias HaMeisen. So when you buy a grave, you're buying it forever and ever. Of course they can charge you more. That's what he said. He said, so there's no problem. There's no problem with that. But okay. Just to add a little to your question. If I have a car, I can rent you the car, and you pay me money, and then I take the car at the end. So why can't you look? The way an economist describes interest as the rental of money. Right? I lend you $100. So look at that. I'm renting you $100. You pay me rent, which is interest, and then you give me the $100. So the chayra, if I could charge rent, I'm just adding to your question, if I could charge rent on a car, I can charge rent on a computer, why can't I charge rent on money? Good, interest. So call it rental on money. It is a good kasha, and you see clearly there's a certain level of chok here, because the proof of the matter is, because a guy, I could charge interest. In other words, it's not an intrinsically evil thing. But the basic idea is that it's a symbolic mitzvah. Because money is the medium by which we acquire wealth, right? So unlike a car is a specific piece of wealth, but money is the basis of acquiring all wealth. And when we get money for that, we're treating it as ours, when in fact Hashem gave it to us to help other people and to support our family. So when a person is Malva Beribis, he's essentially saying that the wealth that Hashem gave me is mine, to use the way I want to use it, when in fact it's a given as a pikadon from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, of course, the logic of that should mean that you shouldn't be able to charge rent for anything you own. But the Torah didn't want to be that harsh. That would have been too difficult for people. But symbolically, the Torah took the ultimate symbol of wealth, which is money, and applied that idea. So you're makir that everything comes from Hashem. Okay, we'll stop here. You have a good week.